Ah!
Everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Pake.
And this is Star Wars TV Cast episode 66.
This week we are covering Skeleton Crew season 1, hopefully, of more to come. We don't know, still, no word. Episode 7, so the penultimate episode of this season at least. We're gonna be in so much trouble.
Can't imagine these four kids in any trouble whatsoever.
I remember when I opened up Disney Plus last night, like right at 8 o'clock when the episode dropped and it was available, and I pulled it up and saw the episode title before hitting play, and I just chuckled to myself. And I like, not exactly sure like who was gonna give the title, but I said it in just kind of that kid voice. Like, I read it out loud. I was like, we're gonna be in so much trouble. I was like, yeah, I already see where this is. That's perfect. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty sure it was gonna be one of the kids. And honestly, I had it down between two of them, and one of them is the one that said it. I just had a feeling that it would be either Fern or Wim that came through with that line. So they didn't disappoint at all. So what were your, like, overall thoughts on this one? I mean, we're talking about episode 7. We only have one more left to cover. I'm not ready for it to be over.
Yeah, well, those who follow me on social stuff, especially like Blue Sky or something, or then just even texting certain people. And so, you know, my initial thought as soon as the episode ended, because I think I posted on Facebook and stuff too, but I was just like, are you criffing kidding me? You have to be kidding. That's the cliffhanger you're going to end on and make me wait a week. Just, John Watts is trying to make me angry at him, but I can't. I'm going to keep coming back.
You have to. We're so close to the end, and I want to see how this season ends for these characters. This one gave us so much because we got the reunion with the parents, which is what I was hoping for. I was hoping that we wouldn't end the season with the reunion because I kind of wanted to get to soak it in a little bit. We also got that really cool message that came through space for them, which I know I mentioned this to you yesterday. I felt like this was The Circle or Survivor, and it was, oh, they made the Letters from Home episode.
Yeah.
And it brought all, you know, the feels.
Oh, we're that far into the season now that they're getting messages from loved ones at home.
Yep.
You can do this. Come on. Win the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. There were some definite highs in this episode. There were some definite... Yeah. Jawed.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I kind of wanted him to be kicked out the airlock door.
Mm-hmm. So as you know, I've mentioned the past couple weeks, my like Funko Pop Skeleton Crew hanging out over here. I got to pull one to the center that gets the main love. It's only for you really on Zoom to see it, but yeah. Mr. Yeah. Jawed Nanawood, a.k.a. Crimson Jack, a.k.a. the Mad Captain Silvo, takes that spot this week.
I am so irritated with him. All of my frustration would be taken out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a list of things that he did that pissed me off and made me want to punch him.
Very jealous of SM33 in that moment, huh?
Yes. Cool thing about this episode, it was directed by Lee Isaac Chung. He brought us Minari and Twisters.
Yes.
So that's cool. I like how they bring in these directors to work on the show, but then everything still seems week to week to be cohesive and together. And I think, you know, the people running the show have done such a great job of weaving all of this story together and making it so much fun and scary at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. The directing has been really cool with this one. Talking about, I mean, I was excited about the Daniels. We gave so much love to Bryce Dallas Howard. And then, yeah, Lee Isaac Chung is a huge pull. But then also, we didn't really talk about, because I didn't know about really until later. I found out and was looking back at it. Episode 5, because we didn't talk about directing and stuff on that. But that was Jake Schreier, who...
Oh.
Beef on Netflix was his. Yeah. But then also, he is directing the Marvel film next that comes out later this year, Thunderbolts.
Oh. Is his.
So hopefully, so him doing the whole episode 5, the whole kind of Indiana Jones down in the tunnels, the traps and all that, hopefully that showed a good kind of bit of the fun style hopefully Thunderbolts will have. So,
oh, I hope so. Yeah, we had so much fun, I think, overall. I think all of the directing has been great. And mm-hmm. like I said, I just think that it's very cohesive how they keep the story moving so it doesn't feel like... Well, each week is a different mini movie. It really feels like a cohesive story from beginning to end.
Definitely.
Well, it's time for us to get to our points, and we're going to get to that in just a second.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back and ready to jump in to our points. And Paik, I'm going to let you kick it off first.
All right. Where do I want to start? There's so many, so many places. It could be fun. I want to start with the kids.
Okay.
But I've got kind of two different little points that it could also just kind of be together. So I'll let you say how we want to do them. One, the other, or just kind of throw them together into one thing. Talking about their them kind of fighting back and reclaiming the ship from the pirates, but then also just their kind of journey, ending their journey, you know, on their final little bit of trek and getting home.
let's talk about them reclaiming the ship.
Yeah. Just have, yeah, the kids fighting back, because I love it, because it comes after that video montage of parents that you mentioned earlier, and it just really like kind of invigorates them a little bit, right? Like they're listening to their parents and the things that they're saying, and you see them getting kind of teary-eyed, but also there's like this fire that kind of gets set under them of like, we're so close, we're not losing this now. And I like how they start talking to each other, this kind of like, we've got to be able to take the ship back. There's got to be some kind of plan. We've got to. And then Wim just, I mean, for all of his faults of thought and reason, you still got to love that kid anyway for his guts, right?
Wim being Wim.
I mean, yeah, he's just newly determined and reinvigorated by this message from his dad. He's going to attempt to just lead the charge against the pirates and take back this ship and... right into Pax's arms, and then wiggles his way out of that right into Silvo. and so it's like, yeah, his common sense is not the best at all, but you gotta admire him anyway for having the chutzpah to try something to, he leaps before he looks, but, you know, you gotta, it set things in motion at least. And then I love Neil's immediate, like, Pax pulls out the knife and holds, like, him and the girls back. And this immediate, ah, sorry, sorry. I'm like, yeah.
Poor Neil. Just, oh, man. Goodness. Well, Wim, all he could think about, I think, he just wanted to like, stop the talking and let's do something. Mm-hmm. And they really didn't have a lot of opportunity. I mean, even in that short time that they were talking about it, well, we need to do something. You have to imagine that the opportunities for them to be able to successfully reclaim the ship and get away, there really wasn't a lot of time because they were being held by a couple of people versus, you know, all of the pirates being in there at the same time with them. Yeah. So they really had to make the most of the situation that they were given.
Yeah.
They might have had another minute or two where they could have strategized, but Wim being Wim did what he felt he needed to do. And it was, you know, it kind of was a catalyst to get them to what they needed, you know, to being able to reclaim the ship.
Yeah, and it leads to Fern really coming into her own on that moment of, and the internet has been very divided the past day from comment threads and places that I've gone and looked on the whole unclaimsies thing. there's people who are not happy with it. There are people who are like, that's the stupidest thing I've seen in Star Wars. And Star Wars is Star Wars a lot of ways, as much as I still love it. And here's what I'll say. Here's my take on it. Of course, that's not how it works.
No.
But I think it's perfect for this show, and it's so perfectly Fern to stay defiant and in a childlike way try to find some way to get what she wants when there's no other option. Everything else has been exhausted. But I think besides her, what it's really highlighting or showing is SM-33 finally taking a stand for what's right. He's tired of Jod, and that's where we get this, like, aye, but it'd be close enough, you know, like, exactly. It's like, is that how it works? No, but screw it. Like, we're going to go with it anyway.
Exactly.
And he did also state right before that, pirate code, captain can only lay claim to one ship. So Jod laid claim to it, but that doesn't necessarily unclaim the frigate still. So SM-33 had some, like, you know, if X, then Y computing going on in his brain. Like, how do I make this make sense? How can we work? You know what? I can award this one to Fern on a technicality. Let's do it.
Well, and Fern had taken claim to the ship on the ship in the beginning. Even though Jod had kind of taken claim of it at one other point, he kind of gave up his claim to take over the frigate.
Yeah.
I'm not up on my pirate law.
Really? You didn't study?
No.
You haven't been studying?
I haven't. But I actually, for me, and not being a Star Wars, like, nerd, I loved that part. I thought it was great. I'm like, of course a kid is going to do whatever they can to try to fix the situation. And I think you're right. I think SM-33 absolutely probably had enough of Jod and said, you know what? This is much better than the alternative, so I'm going to go with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it was kind of SM-33 standing up and having kind of his own little, like, free will of a droid moment.
Well, we know that he's got a few circuits that are loose in there, maybe. So I don't mind it, but I totally can respect that there are fans of Star Wars that are not happy about it or found it to be silly. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah, it's like, I get it, but also, like, I can justify it in my head. I'm like, no, it. If you've been watching this show for the past 7 episodes now, it's like, that's what this is.
Yeah.
Perfectly imperfect with the way that kids are going to be, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's not conventional. It's not going to always make sense. And sometimes those are the best things about shows. You think you've got it all figured out, and then something happens to kind of flip it a little bit, and that can just be one of the best things to happen.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay with it. Plus, I wanted the kids to get the ship, so it worked out for me. Yeah. It gave me what I wanted.
Yeah, so and that's what's most important.
Sometimes. The kids have been through so much together, and we've talked about how they've become this group now. It's not like four individuals or two pairs. They're a quad. They're a group of four.
Yeah.
And they stick up for each other and they help each other. And we got to see that last week. Getting to watch their faces when the messages came from home and realizing, you know, they probably knew or expected their parents were going to miss them. But Wim in particular, I think he was very impacted by the message from his father telling him, I wish I had listened to you and please come home. And I think that's really what pushed him over the edge.
Yeah.
Because we have seen his interactions. What we've seen of it has been so reserved.
Yeah.
And so I think we got to see a little bit of emotion from his dad. And not in the conventional way, but I think who his dad is and what and who his character is, what we got to see, the heart and the impassioned, you know, plea behind it, that was huge because it's not going to be the same as Neil's parents. It's not going to be the same as Fern's mother. It's not even going to be the same as KB's mom's. Mm-hmm. We've seen them and we know that they're more emotive and they show more of their feelings.
Yeah.
What we saw from Wim's dad was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for sure.
I think it really surprised Wim.
Yeah. And I think it's really what Wim needed in that moment, because what we see of him before that is, I mean, in the past couple episodes, he's been getting kind of like homesick and ready to go home. He has that talk with Jod about missing home. And now that that's actually happening, that they're like on their way, they've got the coordinates punched in and they're flying through hyperspace headed back to At-Aten. Once again, he's sad about the end of the adventure. Mm-hmm. And I think some of it's kind of unspoken, but I really see that he has this fear in his head, like, man, we're going to get back home. And then, so almost the episode title is like unspoken in his head, if we're going to be in so much trouble, right? It's like, we're going to get home and then we're all going to be on lockdown. We're going to be facing more strict restrictions. We're going to, you know, never going to be able to do anything again. We're going to be just like eagle eyed and, you know, helicoptered over. And it's just, we're not going to be able to like go on any adventure again. We're going to get back home and real life is right around the corner. And I don't want to go back to school and assessments and serving some great work, because now that I've been on the outside and I've seen adventure, as scary as it is and as terrified as I've been and I want to go home, to know that I could never do that again afterwards is almost more terrifying.
Yeah, I think he was mourning that. I think he, in his head, realized that these were the last moments they were going to get on this great adventure. Mm-hmm. And he was probably never going to get to do it again.
Yeah. To where even he says, you know, I wish I would have never pressed this stupid button, where it's, he's like, maybe, you know, it would have been better if we never left at all, because now we've had a taste of something that we can't have again.
Yeah. I get that. And I think it really helped him to hear the others say, we're not upset that you did that.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we did it.
Neil had come around full other way, which is funny. You know, it was a really fun adventure. Half the time I was about to die, but that's what a real adventure is like.
Yeah. I think he was thinking more of, we're going to go back home and it's going to be the same. We're going home to our life that is not exciting. It is regimented. We do what's expected. We can't ever hope for anything more. And yet we've had this adventure. Like, we have experienced all of these things together and we're bonded through that experience. But that's it. And I think he was kind of in mourning of realizing that they weren't going to get to do that again.
Yeah.
I mean, and Fern is hilarious talking about, well, we can land out in the middle of nowhere and then we can pretend that we were lost and no one has to know about the ship, because I think she starts to realize.
She becomes the dreamer that Wim used to be in, like, the beginning of this, like, we'll keep the ship somewhere. We can come back to it. And he's like,
no.
What had happened? Like, they've switched places, you know? Like,
they're never going
to Debbie Downer over here, and Fern's the one going like, everything will be fine. We can just come back to the ship whenever we want.
I think, though, too, in Fern's defense, she's had a different life than Wim. Wim's life has been very regimented with expectations. And while Fern has had a life similar to that, she's also not been on such a short tether. Like, she's gotten away with more. Her mother is an undersecretary. She has been able to smooth over maybe some of the things that Fern and KB have been up to. And Wim has just not had that. I mean, he hasn't. And I think it's funny how a little bit of each of them has rubbed off on each other. And also what I found great about the message that came from home is that the parents knew what the kids needed to hear. They knew what would be on their kids' minds. Like, Hibby's mother is like, I know you're probably nervous about being out there and not having maintenance and everything. And then Neil's thinking about his little siblings and all of those things. And I love that we got to see that piece of the parents, because we really haven't seen them enough to really get to know them, only like on a surface level thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like this really gave us more insight into the family dynamic for each of the families.
Yeah, for sure. So I
appreciated that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. So I guess, and that ties in again with that second part, like I mentioned, of them kind of those final little bits in Journey Home. And even skip past some of all the piratey stuff we'll talk about.
Talk about the pirates.
but yeah, once they pull out of hyperspace they get there just in time to get tractor beamed right into a giant pirate ship. Forget.
I feel like the kids knew, well, this is the barrier. You know, Atten is in here, so they knew that they were this close to home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the barrier storm, the defensive grid, which Jod puts it together earlier, doesn't say it, but you see him make the connection. Because then he's trying to, like, you know, figure out what it is about the ship that makes it pass through. And then we see SM-33 confirm as they're flying through the barrier going back in that, yeah, the Onyx Sender is a ship that belonged to the Mint on Atten that Rinnad stole to be able to bypass the grid. As for the pirates that were pursuing them onto the planet, they weren't as lucky.
Nope, that was it.
Yeah. But yeah, so the kids make it through the barrier, get back to Atten. Everything seems nice and happy. Fern drops the episode title. It's funny. The ship is automatically docking as Atten protocol is set in. Neil's still thinking about Haina. All is well. So, of course, we got to have Jod up here and muck it all up, right? Having stowed away on the ship before they escaped the frigate.
And here is where he actually does a number of the things on that list.
Yep.
It's like, no, Jod. No. No.
So I assume, yeah, if you mentioned that was probably the where you would like to go next, then, if we connect them, because I've got that as a whole point, too, so we can break it all down together, is just
that Jod. That sounds great.
And that, you know me, and if anybody listens to me on Strange Indeed, a lot of times I like to title my points. I like little titles and sections, so that is Jod ... No, Mad Captain Silvo.
Mine is only titled, Jod, I want to punch him in the face for Brutus to send him out the airlock door.
It's a long title.
It is, but I think it fits.
Yeah.
I mean, start, he made Wim cry.
Yep.
He decapitated 33.
Mm-hmm.
He kicked Snowball.
Yeah.
And I'll even, honestly, I'm adding this on there, even though he was a pirate, he killed Brutus. And I at least had some fun with Wolfie. He's going to be on my list.
If people could see my face reactions, like, he made Wim cry, and I'm like, in vengeful anger, like, yeah, you how dare you? He's like, decapitate SM-33, monstrous. Kick Snowball, what a devil. Kill Brutus, well, I mean, that's fine.
And I followed it up with, I don't think he's redeemable, and I'm down for them to just knock him off. Yeah. No patience. I have no patience for Jod. I don't care if they redeem him next week. He did some really despicable things this week.
Yeah. He was really, the mad Captain Silvo came out. He dropped the facade of Jod, and it was just Silvo in full action, pirate, captain. And yeah, so as much as, yeah, like, he definitely, it's a fictional show, but it was even to the point where, like, I'm connected enough to these characters, and especially about talking about it and getting to really enjoy talking about them and seeing them, to where, yeah, no, it irked me. Like, I was getting legitimately, like, ruffled a little bit watching some of this. I'm like, oof, how dare you?
He's incredibly mean to Neil. Yeah. And he calls them weak, sheltered, spoiled children.
I mean, he's not wrong. He's not wrong, but yeah.
That's not their fault. I mean, right. Their upbringing has, they didn't get a choice in that.
Right.
This is who they are. This is how they grew up. But he's incredibly mean to Neil, and he threatens, basically, tells them he knows what their parents look like.
Yeah. Oh, he was incredibly despicable, but he's still easily my character of the episode.
Wonderful.
Because so much fun to watch. It's entertainment, even if it makes you angry. It's why, as like a wrestling fan, I love the heels so much, because if they can piss you off, they're doing their job correctly, right? So it's this, even in a TV show like this, it's like his villain turn was so good, because if it can legitimately make me feel angry at him, they're doing it right. And its writing is incredible, and the character's done well. And so I do love that.
Yeah, I'm not on that page with you, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So, to a point, I am. Jude Law has done a fantastic job playing
absolutely
this character. And I have enjoyed watching the interactions with the kids. And when he was playing them, basically, I enjoyed the interactions with the kids, because I thought they were really fun. And I thought that there was a great chemistry between him and the four kids.
Yeah. And I still, we'll talk about this soon, probably in this point, but there's still parts of me in my brain that, like you said, when he was playing them, I don't think he was. I think there was still a lot of those moments that were genuine in the moment.
That was very sweet. Just a couple of episodes ago, he and Wim had a wonderful, sweet moment. And then he just completely negated all of it with the way he acted in this episode.
Oh,
and what he
definitely
did to those kids.
But I still think that there was some genuine words spoken in that moment. But Jod is an opportunist. And he's not a loyal person. So
no.
I think he was just playing it day by day. So I don't know. So in a way, he is playing them. It is manipulative, whatever can get him to his end goal. But I also think the advice he gave them, the ways he tried to help them survive, a lot of the things he did for them in those moments were truly for them. But just when it comes down to me or them, he's selfish and he's going to pick himself.
Well, and he's got a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And the kids are terrified. I mean, poor Fern wanted to say something when he was threatening them, and she just couldn't. I don't think that she'd ever been faced with anything that made her so angry and upset and wanting to lash out and yet not feeling like she could, probably ever in her life.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see, because I've got notes to go over some of those things. I wrote down some dialogue and different things. But to get there, I'm going to back up just a little bit. Yeah, of getting where we see Jod's journey to that point. The pirates reaching At-Aten, wrapped and hidden in its barrier of deadly storm clouds first before the kids arrive. And I have to agree with Jod in that first moment. Brutus was kind of just stupidly assuming that it would be easy. I think he makes some very solid points of, like, it's been hidden for hundreds of years. Do you really? It's like, we weren't going to just pull up and, oh, there it is. You know? Nobody searched over here before. Like, of course there's going to be some kind of, you know, hitch to it. So the fact that they roll up to this, you know, barrier and Brutus is like, it's all not worth anything. Go ahead and throw him out the airlock. He's like, do you not have any sense of, like, you just went through a, like, tunnel of traps and things? Like, things are going to be trapped. Things are going to be hidden. It's not all just going to be sitting right out on a plate for you to take. Right. That's not how this works.
But that was before he did some of the bad shit that he absolutely did. And I was ready almost for him to be out of the airlock then.
And I like that Brutus takes him up on, like, sending... Well, he says he'll go, and he's like, no, you stay with him. Send in a volunteer, which I was like, yeah, I don't know about volunteer. I have a feeling that this Corin dude, Glurb, was more of a voluntold, I think.
There's going to be no weed plantation for him, Paik.
No, he doesn't get his whole ocean anymore.
Nope, it's gone.
And his call sign was Ravager One, which, you know, in case we needed one more Guardians nod with these pirates, which is fun. Disney mega conglomeration. But yeah, once they put him in the airlock and then the kids show up, he puts it together pretty quickly. Even though, again, he doesn't say it out loud then. We get it confirmed later through 33, but I think Jod figured it out right then. He goes, oh yeah, Onyx Cinder is an emissary ship of At-Aten. The defensive structures, the grid is going to recognize it and let it pass through. There's something there. And he's like, that's the key to getting in.
Well, and look at how much more regal it looked after it lost all of the outer hull that made it look like it had been stored in someone's basement.
Yeah, I like that. Pulling the ship in with the tractor beam. I love some callbacks, some great callbacks to early in the season in this episode. I'll talk about a few of them. But let's see, is there one that I skipped? No, because it'll be in there. I liked KB using her voice modulation again. Yep,
that was so awesome.
Trying to intimidate the pirates and then using that claw that they love so much, because we've seen them playing around on that claw. And even when they were like the wise elders, they came down on that claw. They love that thing. So
I really loved that they didn't just give up. Like, they didn't just come out. They tried, even if they failed, they did try to keep control of the ship.
They did. They just weren't counting on Jod to be there to blow past their bluff.
Right. Exactly. He should have been, you know, airlocked at that point. Gone into the abyss at that point.
Yeah, but Jod, or really at this point, Mad Captain Silvo, just saying screw it, going full pirate bad guy. Takes the opportunity to kill that mutinous traitor Brutus. Reclaim his crew. Take the Cinder back from these kids. And all these pirates in this show, and it looks like we're not getting Hondo after all. There's still one episode left, but it's not really looking good. So, bummer. But you know what? There'll be a little glimmer of hope, just in case. Who knows? Probably not. I don't see how it makes sense story-wise at this point, but you never know.
I mean, with what we've seen on this show so far, don't count anything out. Right. Just be ready for whatever.
Yeah, I love, again, because I love snarky little villain stuff. As you know, we've talked about the Kids on Bikes role-playing game, leading into us really being interested in talking about this. And we just kind of wrapped our first season of that.
We did.
I love playing villain NPCs. I love being able to be somebody who, like, is at odds with the players. And so that also, a lot of this kind of tickled those parts of my brain a little bit. Jod's little oops after Wendell says in that video, "Don't tell anyone where you're from." And he's like, oops, just, just a jab at Wim for that, you know? And it got a good little chuckle out of me though. I was like, yeah, that's snarky as heck, but I love it. Knew the lightsaber was coming back. Obviously, to decapitate 33, that's not what I was expecting. I'm not happy about that. Although, if we're honest, he is a droid. It's not the worst thing. He'll be fine.
They're just going to have to put him back together. And you know what?
Yeah, he'll be okay.
I feel like KB can do that.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be all right. But yeah, and then that goes into the scenes you were talking about where Jod has fully lost any and all patience or care anymore. He's this close to the ultimate treasure, and these kids are not going to mess it up now. If he's got to be mean and ruthless and violent and threatening, then he's going to be.
And he was.
Part of me still thinks, like I said, that he's not actually going to physically harm any of them, or at least he really doesn't want to. A lot of it is threats. I mean, I know he falls up, I will, but it's like, I don't know. I still think there is some part of him, because of things we've seen, the Jedi code is in him. And here's where I'm going to get a little theorizing here. A little bit of credit to Eric Voss, New Rock Stars, for kind of pointing some of this stuff out. Watch his videos usually after we've recorded. But noticing some of these things, I'm like, yeah, and I think back to it. And I'm like, yeah, no, a lot of that makes sense. But when he's holding out that lightsaber over a bunch of kids, and a little bit of theory, but I was like, man, he's at the right age. That this may have been a danger that he faced when he was even younger than them. Timeline-wise, in the Star Wars universe, he and Grogu from The Mandalorian may have been escaping out of the Jedi Temple during Order 66 simultaneously. When Anakin Skywalker was on his kill all the younglings rampage, right? Because he clearly has some Jedi training, and then the timeline, his age, that would have put him as a small child, as like a youngling, a Padawan, training in the Force at the time. Because we see he knows how to wield the Force, and he spoke some very Jedi words to Wim. I kind of missed some of that, and then again, thanks to Eric Voss for pointing some of those things out. When he's talking to Wim, I mean, the whole letting go of your attachments thing is very Jedi. Not being weighed down by attachments. But then also, what I missed was the exact words he spoke. "Your focus determines your reality" is a word-for-word quote from Master Qui-Gon Jinn in The Phantom Menace.
Oh, okay. That was the last Star Wars movie that I watched.
Yeah. That's something that Qui-Gon said word for word. And so a lot of people kind of picked up on that. And I should have, but it's like, yeah, I mean, so he's learned these things, and he's definitely been trained by Jedi at some point. So I have to feel like there's still something in him there. That's not to say that I like excuse everything or like, but he's fine. Cause no, like I said, I've grown attached to these kids enough to where I was legitimately angered by a bit of when he was snapping at them, you know, your incessant, unending jabber, jabber, jabber. Honestly, it's unbearable. I'm like, okay, don't you dare speak to Neil that way. And then moving on to Wim, and you're the worst one. And that's all just those words. And immediately tear. Yep. Poor boy. I'm like, okay, you made him cry, and now I'm going to have to hunt you down, you no good, horrible, fictional character. And then him shutting Fern down completely, as you mentioned, that whole, like, what exactly are you going to do? You're all weak. Weak, sheltered, spoiled children. It's just like,
going along with your theory, do you think because he went through, likely went through such a terrible trauma at such a young age, he might be a bit jealous that these kids have had the upbringing that they've had where they haven't gone through some of the horrible, traumatic things that he did?
Yeah, very likely. I didn't really think of it that way, but yeah, it makes sense. They're, for, you know, lack of a better term, yeah, these like silver spoon fed rich kids from this treasure planet who've known no hardship, who've known nothing but just everything handed to them. And yeah, oh no, you have to work hard and prove yourself and do something. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's like because of what I'm thinking could be possibly true about Jod. As a child younger than they are, he had to flee and hide from the Empire and then survive on his own and make things happen for himself with nobody there, most likely. So, yeah, it makes sense to see that there's that dichotomy of, like, he's very much a different person, a different upbringing and growth than they are.
He may resent it. I mean, he mm-hmm. may resent the kids for that because they had such a easy, what he sees as easy life when he's had to struggle and fight his whole life. And watching them and seeing them off on a great adventure like it's no big deal when he's been in life or death situations at their age.
Yeah, to where partially it's like he's saying those things in order to, like, really jab into them. Like, you need to shut up and stop messing with things. Let me do what I need to do or there will be consequences. Part of it, I think he's just trying to scare them. But then, as you said, there may be another part of it that, yeah, like, he's finally cracking and letting some feelings that he's had out that he have mm-hmm. been kind of pushed down deep in there somewhere. And the way he delivers those line stuff it's infuriating. But also, I'm going to have to remember to channel it for some future Kids on Bikes villains.
Oh, great.
Because it was well delivered and it was wonderful.
Well, there was a moment when Fern couldn't speak and you could tell she wanted to. I'm like, you need to channel your inner Charlotte, who's my character in Kids on Bikes. Like, because she just had a really good night when we were wrapping up the campaign. I'm like, you gotta channel that to get through this.
Just go for it.
But I also think Jod, not just a jealousy, but I think he may look at it like they don't really understand real consequences.
Yeah. And I think that's why he makes the threat he does. Whether he means it or not, I still don't have that great of a read on Jod with certain things like that, where to really take him at his word or not. But I think that's why he follows that up with the next threat that he does, which is, if you don't go along perfectly with me and you get in my way in any way at all, I saw your parents on that comm and I will kill them if mm-hmm. you try anything. Again, I don't know whether to take him at his word because he's untrustworthy enough to where even when he says terrible things, I don't know if he really means it. Like, what game is he always playing? And I think so it could be that, like, okay, I tried insulting them. I tried scaring them personally, but let me make sure to add that extra layer to really drive it home, whether he means it or not.
I have a hard time thinking how he can redeem himself unless there's someone worse that he has to end up going head to head with.
Right. And with only one episode left, I don't know about that.
Yeah. And so I don't know.
But it was enough for my, like, nerdy Star Wars fanboy to, like, come out for a little bit and for, you know, who cares if it's fictional in a story where I have to get, like, you know, my hackles raised a little bit and be like, you don't even deserve to be wielding a blue lightsaber.
And yet he is.
But, yeah, and then when he gets down to the vault, where is that?
He's so maniacal about it.
Yeah, which, you see that big vault down there? So here's another callback to, like, episode one that I noticed is because you remember when Fern is sitting outside, like, the principal's office, basically, with Wim, and she's picking on him about this whole, they're going to send you down to work the mines. But then you see, there's, like, it's not really mines, but it kind of, like, the mint, they are building and making things, and there wasn't a single person down there I could see. It's all droids, and it's all, so, like, I don't know how many people even know about it, but it's just like, that's kind of funny that, like, her little made-up little threat kind of thing was probably closer to truth than, like, she would have even thought. Yeah, like, there really is something going on down there. I just thought that was funny. Yeah. But yeah, he said he can't hold back, like, even a little bit, his pirate self, when he gets down there. He's amazed at how much old Republic currency is down here. 1,139 vaults, each filled with countless datories. He's practically drooling. He seriously almost starts to cry. He's so overwhelmed with all this treasure. Which, Jude Law, it was incredible.
I mean, he kind of just pushes one of the units and they start to fall off. And I could think is, he's doing that, but I feel like he just wants to actually get up and lay on it and make like a money angel or
credit angel.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. Uh-huh. You know? The droid's got to be standing there like, he's like, ha, 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 ha. I'm just like, what is wrong with this guy?
He's lost
it's the
his
weirdest
mind.
Emissary I've ever seen.
And that's the part he's playing because that's who they think he is. That's who the droids think he is.
Yeah.
And he's just playing that part, and the kids are just not.
You must be the emissary from the Republic. That's me. You nailed it. Let's go.
And he wants so bad to communicate with the ship, and the droids are not letting him. They're like,
so
no.
He wants to talk to the manager. I mean, supervisor.
Yes.
Which I've got thoughts about that. I'll talk about it. But
I have a weird theory about the supervisor. When we get to it, I'll tell you.
I'm curious. What it is. But yeah. So lastly, what I'll leave with Silvo, Jod, whatever. Is the kids reuniting with their parents that we talked about, that it's good we got that. And then that is interrupted right at the cliffhanger end of this episode. This chilling shot of Jod igniting the lightsaber. And it is a quite impactful cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, after thinking about it, watching it a second time, letting it soak, I feel like it's a misdirect. I feel like we're going to start the finale episode with him being nice, trying to play it off as he's some kind of benevolent Jedi who rescued their children. Like, that's my guess. I don't think it's as diabolical as it looks like right when they cut to black in this episode.
But how long are the kids going to go along with it?
Right, exactly.
I mean, they've got security droids all around. Can he really handle all of them?
Yeah, but are the kids going to be willing to risk that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they'd be better off to go back inside the Onyx Cinder and fix 33.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know where we're going to kick next week off, but I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I can't believe that we've gotten to this point where we're at the end of the season. I did really like how the episode started, where we were getting the parents coming together. Like, each one had a different thing to do with the communicator and what they were trying to do and how they were so careful in the message that they sent up. To not reveal anything, because, I mean, it's obvious that they were doing it. And I think they expected. Neil's mom, definitely. She could just tell. Something's going to happen. Because they were doing something. It's an energy thing, I think. And those droids are everywhere. They seem to.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to talk about that, then you're going to kick me off into my super nerdy breakdown that I had to do at the beginning of this episode. This was my shot to be super nerd about something in Star Wars. So let's talk about it. You're talking about that thing. Neil's mother said the thing, or at least part of it. She was about to say the whole thing until she got cut off by spotlights. But she entered a special club of Star Wars characters that have uttered the iconic words, either slightly varied or being cut off or interrupted before finishing, I have a bad feeling about this.
Mm-hmm.
It has been spoken to some degree in every single Star Wars movie and in most shows. Now, before the Star Wars nerds come at me, I'm actually-ing me. Yes, the words are not actually spoken in Galactic Basic Standard, or English, as we would say, in The Last Jedi. But Rian Johnson did confirm or state that BB-8 did in fact say that line, even though it's... But But then literally because then Poe Dameron looks at him and goes, you know, think positive thoughts, BB-8. And then even Leia responds to something with, you know, to him about it, where it kind of confirms, like, that's what he said, was I have a bad feeling about this. So it's like, even though it was in binary, it was there. But yeah, so I got really nerdy with it. So I looked up and found the entire list of characters in all TV and or all movies and shows that have spoken that line, or at least partially before being interrupted or having a slight variation on it. So Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I'm talking the movies first. And there's some of these have multiple times. I'm just going to include them once. And then even when I get to Clone Wars, Anakin and Obi-Wan and stuff say them again. I won't include them in the list in those because already telling them now. But yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, Han Solo, K2SO, in Rogue One, Leia Organa, C-3PO, BB-8, according to Rian Johnson, and Lando Calrissian. And then when we get to TV shows, Yord Fandar in The Acolyte, said it the one time in that show. In The Clone Wars, aside from some of the other characters I've already mentioned, a random B1 series battle droid. I have a bad feeling about this. We got Commander Cody uses it. Rex. Newt Gunray himself says it in like twice in an episode. Nadar Veb says it. Ahsoka Tano says it at one point. Mace Windu utters those words. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine himself uses the line in Clone Wars. Lagos uses it, and WAC-47. And then in Rebels, Ezra Bridger says it once, and then again, it's kind of binary speak, but he has his own way to where if you watch all of Rebels, you start to understand him, even when he is a droid speaking. But C-110P, also known as everyone's favorite war criminal psychopath droid Chopper, says it so many times throughout Rebels.
You have brought up Chopper so many times over the last couple of weeks, just in conversations that we've had.
He's the best. He's a menace. He's a war criminal, and he's awful to everyone, and I love him so dearly. and then in the show Ahsoka recently, it is very varied, spoken by Jason Syndulla, Hera's son, where he just says, I have a bad feeling, and he leaves it there. But there's that. In Star Wars Resistance, it's said once by Kazuda Jono. And then now, finally adding herself to the list, is Numa, Neil's mother, here in Skeleton Crew. So that was a fun, super nerdy little trivia tangent about that line and all the people. But, you know, it felt fun to do. Back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Well, that I feel like was my education for this episode. Understand something that I had no idea of. But now I guess it's canon, I guess, in Star Wars. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, that is, it's a running bit, honestly, for Star Wars. It's just in every movie, and then most shows have included it to some degree, at least once.
All right. Well, back to the parents who are sending this communicator. I thought it was cool that it was KB's parents that were kind of like building the communicator. Yeah. Because they're the like techie people that are.
Yeah. Gotta be good at all that kind of stuff, I guess. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And when they get caught and they're basically getting stunned one at a time, it just made me think of like an Olympic relay where they run and fall to the ground and someone else picks it up and keeps going. It's kind of like at a relay.
Yeah.
To get it where it needs to go, where at the end, Farah is the last one standing and is able to get it off. But I was still thinking it was going to get shot down.
I did too. Like, it took a while to get going. I was like, she's going to watch it go up in the air and then it's just going to get shot.
Yeah.
Like, I was waiting for it.
I really thought so. I thought it was interesting that when they've been taken back to the center, the droids are asking them why they did it. And I'm just like,
yeah,
are you that thick? I mean, really?
Right.
Do you understand? They didn't have a choice.
Yeah, that scene ended with maybe my favorite comedic moment of this episode that cracked me up a little bit, besides John's oops, is one of KB's moms. I don't remember which one, but yeah. She says, the problem is you droids don't listen. And the droid's response, we are always available for standby, and then just turns and walks off. And it's such a perfect timed comedic gag that, like, so good.
Just showed why we feel the need to do things on our own.
So good.
You don't. And at that time, we get KB's mom has that bracelet with, like, the vital sign, so she realizes that...
She's back in range, yeah.
Yeah, so they start to get excited. It's funny, though, because they send up that communication, and it's just like, your kids have been on a magical adventure, and they're almost home, and they get your messages when they're almost home.
Right. Like, if they would still have just been out in the galaxy somewhere, who knows how long that would have taken to get to them if it ever did.
Right.
It was such a shot in the dark anyway.
Yeah. But I'm glad that they tried. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all have these jobs that just seem to be so secretive. Because they're cogs in this giant wheel at Atten. And again, I still don't think, I mean, we know that the creation of money, minting money, is like a primary thing that they do on this planet. Mm-hmm. But everything else, I think, is still kind of like, what? None of them know that this is happening, from what I understand. Like, they don't know that there's all that money underneath them.
Yeah.
So.
Which ties into the last point that I have, but I know you said that you also have some theories and thoughts about it as well.
I think my theory is ridiculous, but it's my theory nonetheless. So, I have a feeling we should meet the supervisor next week. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling. I think given the mysterious way that they've been about the great pirate Tak Rened, that he may be the supervisor himself.
Yeah. I mean, it's been...
It's ridiculous, but...
Yeah. Could be.
I mean, where else would he want to be? In the middle of all this money? I mean, mm-hmm. if you think about it.
Yeah. I don't know the exact time frame. Because, again, that ship was buried under the ground for a long time. So right. It's this... How long ago exactly? But then it's Star Wars, so... Somehow Palpatine returned. So you never know how it's going to happen.
Or a descendant. I mean, it could be a descendant, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous theory, but I just feel like it's tied in there somehow.
Yeah. So my thought about that, and there's a few things so I'm kind of breaking down. My last point is just kind of at Atten and mysteries unwrapped just to find more wrapping paper. And a lot of it, or the first part of it, came in that video from home, which we talked about mostly. I mean, it was just emotionally beautiful. The love for the kids, the line about Neil's little brother. But Farrah and Wendell gave some really interesting and major information. Telling the kids, find a Republic emissary. They know about At-Atten. Which means that the mint on At-Atten is in connection to the Republic in some way. The New Republic. I'm assuming that's the only Republic at this time that they should be talking about. So maybe At-Atten is on the good side of things. Maybe this money ends up funding the resistance efforts. I don't know. Like, I'm still interested to see how old Republic systems, this old Republic credits, survived the Empire and are now being used by the New Republic in some way. It's because there's been so many changes of hands and sides through all of that. So I'm still at a loss. Like, I'm like, I want this explained to me. I'm intrigued, though. Like, how does this all work? Because apparently the Republic are involved. That they're who's hiding at Atten for reason. So
let's see, 1,139 reasons? Yeah. Vaults? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's... a lot of reasons.
Yeah, so they left some really interesting crumbs there that I need to know more about. And I don't, are we going to get all that information in one last episode? I don't know.
I know, which leads me to wonder, what is the game plan for this story?
Yeah,
How does it fit into the bigger picture? Is it something that can continue? I want to see these characters again. I hate the thought of thinking that the last chance that we're going to, or the last time we're going to spend with them is next week. And that's going to be it.
Yeah.
They're too fun. I just have loved this adventure. It's been an adventure, yeah. Like, to be on this story and talk about it every week.
Yeah. And then that whole message from the supervisor that interrupted the security droid there about the emissary ship is approaching is kind of sus to me. Like, part of me wonders if it was automated. And is there actually a supervisor at all?
It wouldn't be the first time.
How often do these emissaries actually arrive, if at all? Because the people didn't seem to be prepared or have an idea about where it was going to be docking. And when the ground opened up, seemed to catch everybody off guard. Like, it doesn't seem like the people of AT-AT know that these emissaries are coming back and forth. It's not something that's been shown. And it kind of felt like they didn't know what was happening.
I mean, I'm starting to wonder if maybe you're right and there isn't a person. Maybe it's some sort of hive mind, like technological mind.
Exactly. Some algorithm or something, which Star Wars hasn't gotten into that too much. But I mean, yeah, who knows? Which is, again, what I was kind of laughing about, the, you know, Jod wanting to speak to the supervisor. Is better than speaking to a droid. And I was like, I don't know, because I get a funny feeling that the supervisor may not be all that, you know, more than that themselves. I don't know.
Like, it could be a consciousness.
Yeah. Because I don't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I'm not sure what we're going to get.
So many
questions.
I hope that we'll have some answers. I hope that we get some answers, at least, next week with the end.
Do you have any other notes or anything else?
I touched on briefly the killing of Brutus, but I just wanted to say that KB using her voice modulator to say, let us go, or this guy is done for, and then Jod just takes Brutus out of the equation.
Yep.
I thought was very badass. Is kind of, you know, I was still kind of like, you're sending a message to the rest of your crew that you're going to sacrifice them. I'm not sure that's the message you want to send.
Well, I think he turns it around pretty well. Because then, I mean, after doing that, because the crew does, they pull up their blasters and kind of hold it on Jod. And he just turns and says, like, Brutus was a traitor and a mutineer. And look where it got him. Do you want to follow him or do you want to follow me? I'm giving you that option.
True. That is true. And I also really loved that when the kids were on their way back, before they get in the tractor beam, and they're just, like, going home, and they're running around the ship and having so much fun, we don't get to see them do that. Like, just be kids. And so I thought it was a lot of fun to see that, to get to see that little bit of them being kids. Because other than in the beginning when Neil and Wim were pretending to be Jedi, I mean, there just hasn't been enough play. They've not really had a lot of time to play. And so I just have two questions that I put at the end of this. Are we going to meet the supervisor, and how is this going to end?
Yeah. Great questions.
That is what we'll answer next week.
Hopefully.
Do you have any notes?
I don't. I knocked everything out in my points this week.
Then it's time for some listener feedback, and we will be back in just a few minutes. And we are back with our listener feedback. Peg, do you want to take the first one?
All right. This first one comes from somebody regular listeners of this Star Wars TV cast may know very well, Jonathan Buckelow. he says, binge watch, catch up tonight. Been loving it so far. Good to know. Good to know the Star Wars man himself. Jonathan's been enjoying this series.
We also got one from Catherine, who said, that message from home had me tearing up, especially Neil's little brother and Wim's dad. These kids have totally wizard parents. Not only were they helpful, but they were honest, and that meant a lot to Wim. There's something that makes me think Jod will be a good guy in the end, but every time he was on screen, I was yelling at him. Wim called Claimsies first, but thankfully Fern got him back with Unclaimsies. Do you think the space rat can fix SM-33? I still want his babysitting services. I'm so excited for the last episode. You know, that reminds me of something that I didn't mention about Wim and his dad. When everyone was reuniting with their families, Wim and his dad kind of like went up to each other and they didn't hug, and then they hugged. Like there was like this moment.
There's this moment, of like nervousness of like, I don't know. I was trying to read into what that was of Wim being like, how much trouble am I in? Do you hate me? Are you mad at me? But I think even Wendell was kind of on the same thing. It was like, do you forgive me? I should have listened. I should have like understood you more. And there was this like trepidation between them that then that barrier was destroyed gone pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, we do have a message from Steve. He live Steve'd episode 7. So let's relive it with him right now.
Hello, Skeleton Crew cast. This is Steve. Sorry, I had food in my mouth. That's bad. Bad podcasting right there, live Steving. But sorry I missed episode 6, but here we are starting episode 7. We got the previously on, and we're seeing all the things that we're remembering. Oh, and back on at Atten, we're trying to send a message through the barrier. Oh, she didn't get to finish the I have a bad feeling about this typical Star Wars line. Neil's parent, right? Yeah. They're not going to let you keep the ship, kids. Sorry. Yeah, Jode's right. Atten is hidden behind a barrier of muck. Oh, so the barrier has some sort of that it just destroyed that ship and Jode's. Maybe we should send another. Oh, how big is Brutus's ship that he's just pulling in the what was the pirate ship called? The Onyx Arrider Nunner? Oh, they grabbed Brutus. Oh, and he just shot Brutus in the head with that blaster. Oh, Jode has a blaster, but where's his lightsaber? We never did see where that ended up. And I guess Jode is now captain, right? Or Silvo, or Dread Pirate Roberts, or Crimson Red Jack Man, whatever his name is. So they need to find a Republic emissary, whatever that is, to get through the barrier. And when we need a plan, but I'm just going to Jenkins this thing. What is it? Leroy Jenkins, attack! It didn't work. I'm afraid it does work like that, Jode. She can just claim unclaimsies and take the ship back, I guess.
Yes!
So 33 knows how to get through the barrier? Oh, that makes sense, because he stole one of the Mint's own ships. It should be able to make it through. And apparently that's all it took. Fern just said the title of the episode, we're going to be in so much trouble. Mic drop. Oh! And I guess Jode got his lightsaber back, and that's all for 33. Okay, at least he didn't step on the rat thingy. Oh, harsh words, Jode. Harsh words. Oh, and the kids are home, and their parents are seeing. Is that the ship? And Atten has a landing port, apparently. Just for this ship, because it put him into a landing sequence, right? Jode pretending to be the emissary. Yes, I will see the supervisor, or send him to me. Bring him to me. Bring me your finest refreshments. Oh, so it couldn't bring the kids to their parents, but it brought the parents to the kids. Aw. And that's where it ends. Jode lights the lightsaber, and now I gotta wait a week.
Peg's sentiments exactly.
I feel you on that. How dare you make me wait? Oh. But yeah, that's great. Also, going back to Catherine's feedback for just a second, because I'm not going to let Daphne just breeze right over it like she wanted to. Thank you, Catherine. The gospel of wizard is working. Our numbers slowly grow and we're going to get there. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. And for technically making Daphne say it by her reading your feedback. So there is that.
Yeah. And I knew that. And I should have remembered. I should have had you read that one.
Because she's been telling me all season, you're not going to get me to say it. And Catherine, you got her to say it in some roundabout way.
Of my own volition, I am not going to say it. If it's part of feedback, I have to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, all right. That's it. That's the show this week. Man, like Steve just said, I got to wait a week for the next one. It sucks, but thank you everyone for listening in this week. We appreciate it.
Our next episode, Skeleton Crew, Season 1, Episode 8.
Oh, the finale. I'm not ready.
Neither am I. I'm sad. I'm excited to see what happens, but I'm sad that it's ending because this has just been so much fun.
Yeah. If all goes according to plan, I should have a new nifty little Skeleton Crew t-shirt that I can wear while recording that finale episode, even if it's just for me and you here on Zoom, but I should have it. yeah, if you'd like to write in, leave us a message, voicemail like Steve did through email, you can do that. Find all those ways. Of course, we're at skeletoncrew@podcastica.com, but you can find links to all other socials and ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows. So I was just on Squid Game Cast this week to break down episode 3. I'm so excited to have been on that episode because I really enjoyed it and it introduced a whole bunch of things that I had a blast talking about.
That's awesome. Yeah, Squid Game coverage going strong. And then the Cobra Kai last group should be out somewhat soon. I mean, hopefully the beginning part of this year, so stay tuned for that as well. The Walking Dead rewatch stuff going still for now until I think Last of Us Season 2 is finally confirmed for April. So we've got that to look forward to, and then I know Jason and Lucy will be diving into that for sure.
Yes, and Paik and I finished Season 8 of Run for Your Lives. We wrapped that up last week with our 200th episode and our Season 8 Riffle Awards. So that was a ton of fun. We'll be taking a little break over there and coming back on Valentine's Day. While we wrap things up here first, it's been fun. We've been recording multiple episodes for a few weeks, so kind of chilling just a little bit before we start getting Season 9.
Yeah, and speaking of Valentine's Day, the Yellow Jackets buzz has been growing more and more and more, and that Season 3 drops on Valentine's Day, and then you guys are going to jump right into covering that.
We are.
Be here before you know it.
Yeah, me, Penny, and Wendy are excited to be covering that again this season. There's just been so many cool things that have come out in the news and so many questions to be answered, so it's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right, so like I said, that is our show this week. We will see you next week for the finale.
Thanks for listening.
And always fight like Fern, be creative like KV, be nice as Neil, keep wondering like Wim, and as always, keep it wizard.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.